So, Ren, how did you end up in Vancouver? You're not from here, correct?
No, but I was working up north in Fort St. John, and I came here just before Expo, and basically it was supposed to be a 3 week vacation, and I said, fire me and throw me out. I'm not coming back. 40 below was just too much. Then coming here was a real, this was before AIDS, so it was really open. You know, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing sanded jeans.
And what year was that, roughly?
The year before Expo.
85. So, okay. How did you find how did you get involved with the community, the gay community or the drag community or whatever community you want?
Me, basically, Dawn, I used to like to go see those shows. And then there was Diana Rose, who roommate was my roommate was her boyfriend, so it was all the time. And Denman Station, so I got to raise my dog back there, so I didn't really mind. It was everybody was very accommodating.
And what do you think the people were like back there? What kind of people were they like?
You know, and only for myself, it's basically you're going to hell because you're gay. Well, I was going to sample every fucking thing that was going to send me to hell, you know? So, and it was, this is before AIDS, so it basically, you know, it was wide open. No, there was no, everybody was horny, you know? So, and it happened all the time, so.
Do you felt that you were accepted when you came to the city in the gay community?
Yes, I hadn't felt community since I left my part of Acadia.
And what kind of activities did you do while you were involved in the gay community?
Well, I did remember the gay games. I did a lot of the work for that. I worked in the bars there and ended up taking the Israeli flag around in the closing ceremonies. So that was when I started getting involved, and that's when I start meeting, I networking through the community.
So as time goes on, I guess the AIDS epidemic started, and how did you get involved with that? So
Well, by then I'd been involved with my partner, and he had it. And the way myself and everybody else was behaving, I assumed I'd get it sooner or later. So I worked on that premise, you know. And in the beginning, nobody knew what was going on. So, you know, once the diagnosis came down, all of a sudden you were a leper. And I mean, you couldn't even get medical help. So I did a lot of taking care of my own, you know, basically shit, puke, the whole thing, and literally had to have in the end, had to have a do not resuscitate, do not revive order, and get him in a wheelchair and then abandon an emergency for him to get, you know, to die. So.
So back there was really no support mechanisms,
No, it was
nobody.
God's curse on gay people, you know. There was a lot of fear. Ignorance and fear make a bad cocktail, you know. It's sort of like the shaggy horse went down in less than 2 months because everybody there almost died within that 2 months. I mean, there weren't enough customers left to keep the bar open. And Miss T's used to be like that, and then Chuck's Pub.
So what did you, how did you find your social outlook besides being with your boyfriend at the time?
My
Did you?
boyfriend, our friends, I mean, all of a sudden time became very precious. So I spent it with a lot of people I knew. And I also was involved with, I was called Earth. Easter Sundays, and then Meals on Wheels, and now it's Vancouver Meals.
Loving Spoonful.
Yeah, Yeah. So I was there since Gordon House mm-hmm. on, and then later. You know, but as with everybody who volunteered to help, and that's where the drag shows really came in handy, because I don't really think a lot of people would have lived any more comfortable lives without it. Because, I mean, they would raise one drag queen that we both know that, you know, I remember her raising enough money to buy 5 microwaves, and that's what you did, you know. So I was involved with Dinah Rose. It was basically the same thing. So it was a lot of everything, and by falling in with others, you know, who are in my same boat.
Mm-hmm. So besides the drag community seemed to be a big part of that whole beginning mm-hmm. part of the epidemic.
Well, it was the only lifeline, because mm-hmm. Even at that point, lesbians were afraid of gay people. And like I say, I remember some of the big names, just wherever you went, they did every show, you know what I mean? They fundraised, they brought people microwaves so they could at least warm something up to eat. And, you know, there was one guy who had read that that if you spread photocopier liquid on your legs to get rid of the sores, it would heal them. Well, he basically burnt his legs, you know. So, but that's what it was. I mean, you had people jumping out of apartment doors, holding your partner's hand, at you know, several, a lot of suicides.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so, just talking about resources, how did people connect about what was out there, or what was the actual facts of, you know, how when you had sores and that? And
well,
know,
basically it was a lot of word to mouth, because nobody knew. And then, like I say, you know, fear was there, because you just literally every time you go to the bar, you who wasn't there, mm-hmm. you know. So, and the only place that would do services for gay people then was the Anglican Church down here, in, just off of Davie.
The one that's on Jervis?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Did you get involved in other, like ACT UP and that?
Well, I did. In basically, you marched, you did everything, and basically, ACT UP was basically. There were desperate people, they were dying, nobody was paying any attention, so they became confrontational. And I understood the ideology, but I didn't agree with the method. Mm-hmm. And it kept getting more and more radical. And that opened the door for the Black Bloc. And once they got in there, it just, everybody turned on everybody. And that's when I started having trouble, when all of a sudden that I was not HIV positive became a problem, you know. And I would have people confront me about it, and people I'd worked with in all these projects who had AIDS were just livid that I didn't. And I ended up having people following me around with syringes of their blood to inject into me. And this was right after Myron died. And then they broke all the windows out of the house one night. Just time to go. So literally, all of a sudden, I'm living on the street in the East End.
Mm-hmm.
Which was worse with AIDS.
Mm-hmm. So, what was the hospital? Because you must have had a Myron in the hospital off and on.
I had Myron in the hospital once he went into a coma for 6 weeks, but that was the big hospital over here,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then several times here in the AIDS wing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and each time, spring back, then fall further down, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, it just wasn't worth it for him, because it was very painful, and you know, touching him began to hurt him, and you'd leave marks. So.
And how did you deal with that? I mean, because you must have loved this person, right?
I loved him, and I did a lot of crying alone. I still do a lot of crying inside. I have a lot of survival guilt, but by the grace of God, once you love somebody, you love somebody. So, watching him die, and the part that really killed me was having to abandon him in emergency. Mm-hmm. With a do not resuscitate, do not revive.
Mm-hmm. Why would they make you leave him there by himself?
That's the only way he could get treatment in the end, to die with some amount of dignity. So when I still go and I go to the hospital and I see all our friends, I make sure that their dignity is intact, because in the beginning, AIDS patients were stripped of their dignity, and treated like garbage. Mm-hmm.
In those beginning days, people wore masks and full
masks and the holes, mm-hmm. guard over the face and mm-hmm. double gloves mm-hmm. and when they had friends in the hospice, all they wanted to do was to be touched. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I assumed I was going to get it and die. Mm-hmm. So
really, you weren't really taking any kind of cautions like healthcare practitioners were. You were basically, these were your friends and loved ones.
This is it. And basically, it wasn't until after Myron died that spousal rights came into play. And by then, his family had taken everything and told everybody he died of cancer. So, mm-hmm. Physically, everything disappeared in 24 hours, and that was that. The only thing that ended up staying was a picture that we had in the frame store to get reglassed. Mm-hmm. And I just completely broke.
Yeah. How did he get diagnosed, or what were the signs? You must have seen them.
Well, first it was shingles. He kept having repeated bouts of shingles. And basically through all the blood work, that's where found out that he has HIV. But Myron was 15 years older than I was, so, it came with the territory. Mm.
Did you find you were going to a lot of celebrations of life? We didn't start calling that right away, right?
But that became the terminal. Basically, one year I did over 200 funerals at St. Paul's. Wow. And since then, I haven't been to a funeral till passed, and mm-hmm. it all comes back. Mm-hmm. Because they pile up and they're one after another and after another, and you feel like the song One Tin Soldier. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As you look around, and for me, I look at the buildings, and I remember when the guy jumped out of this one in front of the restaurant, and mm-hmm.
So as time grew on, did you find that organizations were starting to open up and more resources?
Well, after ACT UP in the Black Box, I had to leave the West End, so I ended up in the East End, and the East End was worse off AIDS-wise than the West End was. At least the West End was organized, but these are throwaways. These are drunken Indians, so they don't really deserve, a lot of respect. And that's what really shocked me, because I'm an Acadian. We lost our freedom because we refused to go to war with the First Nations, because we bred into them. And, and it's in your face. And basically, I'm realizing that, just because I have, a lower melon count, but that was just horrible. And then to watch Ms. T's, the old Greyhound station, what was the bar next to it?
Oh, goodness.
Okay, that one and two across. Basically, what was happening down there is there'd be a beer bucket. Mm-hmm. And when First Nations ordered a beer, that's where it came from. Everybody's leftover beer, you know? Mm. And it was sort of like business. That's how you did business.
Right.
You know, so the inequality just sort of sent me more and more into my own little shell. You know, I lived, I think 3 months on the street in the East End. So I get to know a lot of these people. And, you know, addiction is addiction. Mm-hmm. But they were nice. They were good people. They were assholes, but, you know, their humanity was there. You know, they were generous to a fault. And that's what I found about the East End is, you know, if you didn't have anything, somebody would always have, you know, something for you to eat or whatever. So it was a different kind of care. But when it comes to health care, it was very hard to access. Mm-hmm. You know, because of the postal code, you weren't allowed any barbiturates, opioids, you know, even you couldn't even get T3s. Mm. So just because of your postal code
was Vancouver in need of health around back then?
The name doesn't ring.
Mm.
You know.
Okay. Just curious.
Because this was before 2016.
Right.
You know, where basically the colonialist attitude was strong there, and more so. But like I said, I got to see divisions in ways I hadn't seen in Montreal or Toronto, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was cut and dry.
Mm-hmm. So you came back to the West End. Did you find a change in the West End and in people's?
The West End, when I came back to it, it took me 12 years to get my housing. But when I came back to it, it was like walking through the hometown after, you know, it had been burned down. You know, you know these places, you have reminiscence, but the faces have all changed, and now you have a population that has no idea of what went before them. And, you know, this little SOB was beaking off at Mariah, and, you know, Mariah raised a lot of money, and I just basically had enough and just stood up and said, you know, she made it, you know, safe for you to suck dick and not get tanned your chiclets, so shut up. I just
yeah.
And I did, but the irony is I end up comparing it is when I first came here, there was a family sort of order to all of it, you know what I mean? There were elders, they were respected, there were dirty old men, they were laughed at. You know, there was always a level of security because we had to have security. I mean, do you remember the grocery store before No Frills?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they lost their business because when a guy came in who was being beaten up because he was being gay and they refused to call emergency, and they just got clobbered. You know, that's when the gay community came out and just basically say, money talks and bullshit walks. So all of a sudden everybody's shopping everywhere else. So their business died.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would send out a direct point to the rest of the community. You know, if you're going to live off of us, you're going to support us.
Mm-hmm.
And across from where we live, I live with Myron, Aaron Webster and his partner. So I got to know him very well, and after he was murdered, the whole community went on lockdown, sort of thing. Stunned how brutal, and basically, you know, six Christians afraid of a gay man in the middle of the park in the middle of the night. What the fuck were you doing there? Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. But what that did is I found that literally that's where my term put a brick in your purse come from, because everybody had enough weight in their purses. And there's an Indian one you and I both know. You didn't fuck with her. But I never had any problems with her. She said her knew that I come from the same stock, so no. But we'd sit down, we'd have coffee after the bars, and these carloads of people would come through and either assault or insult one or the other. Mm-hmm. And after Aaron was killed, I remember, you know, basically the bait was some prissy old queen walking down, and then as soon as she turned down the alley, all these guys would get out of the car to go beat her up. And all of a sudden, you know, you get half a dozen or more, and they just get a queen beaten real hard, you know. And then to find out, a lot of that is a lot of the guys who came back with their friends had been there the day before for their blowjobs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that sort of set everything, and it's also set into action. The cops couldn't ignore it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not our issue. It's not our issue. Well, it's in your face right now.
And that's when Shane the Johns sort of got imposed, wasn't it?
Again?
Shane the Johns.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's when, like I say, things really began to change. Mm-hmm. And it was ugly in the beginning, because I remember sitting across from the cops and just hating them, you know, your reason why, sort of thing. And it took a long time to build up respect, but they have my respect, and I think they have the gay community's respect, because they've been very tactful, you know.
Do you find back then it was more community? People supported each other?
Well, I think back then it was more community, because we had no resources and we literally had to depend on our friends and you know, trap line. I mean, you see the levels of pots of soup I cook. I mean, that would be gone in a day, because it'd all be shipped off to someone who has nothing, you know, and vice versa, you know.
So the bar scene has changed lately, within the last few years. Everything's online, and mm-hmm. how do you feel about that?
Well, I think it breeds ignorance, you know. And I mean, I know exactly what you mean, because you go on Sunday and you look, and half the people are doing this, and basically they're on Grindr trying to, he's 6 meters away, but I don't want to talk to him, you know what I mean? It's just, But what it's done is it's killing the art of conversation, you know, and all of a sudden you realize that education is going down, the level of conversation is going down, the vocabulary is going down, and the piss me off factor goes right through the roof, you know, just because they don't work in a team. It's me, where when we were in the middle of the crisis, it was us, you know, and that's part I miss. And it's sort of like these kids who live on you know, the net, perhaps they're getting their needs met, I don't know. But it's not really grooming them for social conversation, because they can't move beyond their cliques. And that's where, when there was a structured community, you know, the elders and all that, that's where that came into play. And now it's not there. And basically, there's this little clique. They're all to themselves. They don't go out about it, but, you know. And then there's this clique, and You know, it's back to the leather queens don't like the drag queens because the drag queens don't like the tranny. You know, it's sort of, we're back to that again.
Yeah. It's, with the youth today that are on PrEP, what's your beliefs, what's your thoughts behind that?
You know, PrEP's not a silver bullet. You know, it's not okay. Not AIDS, but I was reading an article about one person who was on PrEP that got it. But right now, you have to deal with the, you know, the old regulars: gonorrhea and syphilis, and you know, anal warts, and you know, mm-hmm. and just sort of, you know, there are still risks, and you know, just having a pill that says there are no risks is really gives a false sense of security, you know, and it's just not, like I say, low conversation skills, you know, getting to know people skills are missing, you know, if it's on the net and 144 characters in cope with that, but then you start talking about, you know, looking from my perspective, living through an epidemic and now watching another one come, you know, in the form of fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, kids, if you don't get wise, you're going to get taken, you know. And I guess that's my piss. When I say I'm pissing off, it's not at the kid, it's just sort of like, if A happens, B happens, C happens, then D's going to happen. That's exactly what happened before. You know, so the expression, you know, those who do not learn from the past are condemned to repeat it. Well, they won't listen. You know, they have no community outside of that, you know, little clique. And mm-hmm. we both know those little cliques don't survive long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when they're under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, right now, I'm with mental health down here. And I'm seeing exactly the same things unfold in the beginning, you know. It just, everybody is overwhelmed. This will be in a year, and this so far this year, we've gone through three sets of staff.
Mm.
You know, it just burns people out because it's just too much. You know, but we had to do it with AIDS, and you know, deal with the body fluids and trying to keep them in their homes for as long as you could. There was a lot of throwing them out if the landlord could get the upper hand. Didn't want any AIDS people in the building.
Yeah. But back then we also had such a big string of friends that we would take shifts mm-hmm. as
yeah,
well,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm tired, I need some mm-hmm. sleep, I need rest. You know,
well,
whereas
your friends became your social network and their friends became part of that social network.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we all came together for an ugly cause,
mm-hmm.
and right now, you know, you see the divisions again. And what's really funny is, you know, whether you call it gay, lesbian, First Nations, when you start breaking them all down, what you're really doing is creating a little wedge that all wants to go their own way. But when they're focused, things get done.
Well, that's the thing. They put them in their silos. So, because if you put them in silos, they're not that strong. You put them all together, then
yes, yeah. The people united will never mm-hmm. be divided. That's mm-hmm. you know, and you know, and like I say, ACT UP in the beginning was sort of a lift up, because you know. I honestly felt that we were going down. So, you know, if you're going to die, you know, the cop's going to kill me. You know, so you get out there, but the more militant it got, and then like I say, then when Black Box infused, it just, they drove as many wedges as possible. So,
mm.
yeah, it's sort of like, in the end, when I remember the cocktail first came out and it had some success. Mm-hmm. That's when a lot of the fundraisers who'd been raising for years just picked up and left. You know, I wasn't the only one. It just, you step away and, you know. And that's what I found happened with a lot of people, because now that I'm back into the West End, on occasion I get to see a lot of those old queens that, you know, I used to know, and those were the good old days. Well, that's what we called it, you know, mm-hmm. the good old days. So, but you don't want to live in the past. Mm-hmm. But when the present looks like the fucking past, you know, because that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. And no, it's not my problem. It is your problem, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be, I think what I walked away with is basically, it's better to be proactive than reactive. You know, because we were always running to catch up when we were dealing with HIV here. And just literally to be able to treat like a person, you know. So it's come a ways, but it's still got ways to go. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know what to make of the younger kids. I mean, some of them are really nice, and there's generalities isn't really good neither. But, you know, there's just seems to be so many of them who are, they're not acquainted with the same world I'm acquainted with. And it just sort of, I mean, I'm before, you know, the net. Most of them are after the net, you know. Mm-hmm. So we have two different realities. And I crave conversation, but, you know, I don't really enjoy the same conversation in half an hour. Yes. Over and over. Exactly. And over again.
I heard that yesterday.
Yeah,
just the day before. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you go verbatim on them and they're right shocked. And then, you know, well, be honest. And when you're really honest with them, you've really offended them because you know, popped in delusions. So. Mm.
But any questions, Ben?
Well, did you have support available to you as a caregiver during this time at
nope.
all?
Nope. Nobody did.
That's an immense role to be carrying on your own.
No. I still carry it. Yeah, it is what it is. You know, I don't think anybody gets through life without being damaged. You know, it is what it is. It's a hole in my heart that I've learned to live with, but every now and then it overcomes me. You know, and especially holidays, you know, when, like, Gay Pride. I remember when Gay Pride was a lot of fun. Now it's a lot of politics. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, shutting down the streets and all that, and then you have to pay for everything. Well, that's not how it works. You know, then all of a sudden, it's good business, don't get me wrong. I mean, yeah. The city makes a lot of money off of it. Mm-hmm. It just, all of a sudden, right now, you pay for everything. You know, the bottle of water was $1 before Gay Pride and $2.50 after.
Exactly. Yeah.
So everybody's out gouging. Mm-hmm. You know, and it becomes a freak show. So I don't do that. I mean, now since I've, my God, it's a year tomorrow since I've had the surgery, my gastric bypass. Mm-hmm. So I've really changed a lot. And the whole idea of going and spending an afternoon in there, you know, I just, nah. You know, I don't have to bail money.
Really?
I'm a very direct person, and when they love me, they love me. But when they hate me, whoo. Yeah. So, but that's it. I mean, I am sarcastic. B, I do use double entendres. And C, don't say be honest with me. And then the next question, you know, you're honest with them, and their nose is right out of joint because you you know, blowing up their fantasy. You've seen through the bar face, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and life's too short now. It's direct, and like I say, you save your best insults for the family. It's true. So, any more questions?
Well, anything else you wanted to say about how the drag community was responding to the epidemic? Because we haven't heard that much about that, and I would love to hear a little bit more.
Well, all of a sudden, Mariah start doing show after show after show, and so did Diana Rose, and the one from Newfoundland.
Ms. Adrian?
Yeah, Ms. Adrian, and Venus, you know. They were all working, and there were some new faces, mm-hmm. new talent out too. But a lot of them, you know, I don't remember what happened to them. But they were out all the time. I mean, like I say, it was, you went out to a fundraiser, you didn't go out for a beer. You know what I mean? And if it meant a $20 tip to, as you're being performed, well, that $20 tip ended up going to them, and they in turn gave it to towards, like I say, the big thing was microwaves.
Well, that means
beautiful. And yeah, and I mean, there were shows from, oh God, the Gandhi Dancer, Demonstration, Numbers,
Faces.
Mm-hmm. Even Misty had a native one all the time, Misty's. You know. But that was interesting. I had to be the bouncer there a couple of times. So, but it just, you know, it's like, it's really interesting. It's because if you think about it, out of all the bars that really was truthful to the gay community, I thought was Demonstration and like Hamburger Mary's and Doll and Penny's, which is now, mm-hmm. you know, which is now, but I mean, they stay true to the community, mm-hmm. where right now you've got most of the bars are owned by straight companies, and you're just a process thing, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember when, you know, celebrities was a place to go. Now it's a place to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And same with
numbers,
yeah. And let's face it, between the Junction, which is a good good drag bar, and Pump Jack, you know, you're not supporting anything but your own, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall when basically all the different leagues started, like the bowling league and the softball league?
No, I was all out of here by then.
Okay.
It basically, enough is enough. I mean, I literally had a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it just, I honestly, after Myron died and the windows were broken, and yeah, you know, his family came and took everything. It just, I broke, you know, I just put on my warmest clothes and just kept walking until I ended up at Main Street in Hastings. And the only thing that got me off the street is I had my dog then.
Mm.
And, you know, I had to take care of him. And I think if I didn't have him to take care of, you know, I would have gotten into the drugs or, mm-hmm. you know, felt as lost. But the dog just sort of kept me mentally intact to a functioning level anyway. Mm-hmm. But no, it just, there's just no way to reconcile myself with what I'd lived through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just was so, I ended up with a small group later on of war vets with survival guilt. And then I think that was the first time A, I had a name for it, and B, that I'm not the only person who feels like this, you know, that, you know, could I have done something better, you know, why them, not me? Because I was looking forward to dying, mm-hmm. Yeah, with my husband, all my friends were dead. Surviving was no gift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you, like I say, I'm in rooms in the hospital, and I can remember something that hits me back from 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the smell of flowers. Disgusting. But no, the drag shows went on and on and on. And, you know, as the older gay men who had money started to pass, they start leaving money to groups to help the gay community. And I think that's what happened with a lot of them, because when they died, a lot of their money ended up coming into the community in very helpful and very positive ways. But for everyone like that, I mean, there were 10 or 15 who were, you know, fighting the landlord because the landlord was trying to evict them because they had HIV. And I remember when Easter Sundays turned into Vancouver Meals, we did a fundraiser at the old armory, and that night we raised $150,000. And it sort of, that was the, you know, the engine started going. And just, like I say, after a while you're volunteered out, mm-hmm. you're emotionally drained, and you just have no reference to normal. So what I've taken away from that now is basically, when we get together, I have a lot of fun, I enjoy it. But when I'm home, I also enjoy my own company, and I enjoy silence, you know, because sometimes it's just too much, mm-hmm. you know. And like you say, you're not supposed to live your life in the past, but when you see this coming, and you know, it's not the gift of second sight; it's just being able to think, you know, mm-hmm. this is happening now; it's going to happen. Remember how Coke was just a little recreation drug. And then, boom, right about the time AIDS hit, you know, people were going down, you know, either as a form of suicide, or they just didn't care anymore. And just, you know, that was the drug of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the drag community has changed a lot, I imagine, hey?
It has, and many have passed, but there are several who are still around that they still do shows, but they're not, you know, and I haven't seen any because I just don't feel I want to. Just, it brings back a lot of fond memories, but it also touches a lot of, you know, and I learn sarcasm from drag queens. Yeah. It just, it's hard. I mean, it's funny. It was only for the first time, and 3 years ago, it was the first time I saw Mariah without Mariah.
Oh, okay.
So I just, and basically the giveaway was the lips and the voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You want to be in show business? No, then get your fucking feet off my stage. That was my introduction to my first drag show. Okay.
Yeah, I saw her come back and say, oh, girl, I see the North was really good for you. You've eaten a lot. And God, she goes, oh, yes, dear.
No. Yeah, well, this is it. We're all... little more, you know, mm-hmm. weightly.
Yeah.
You know, I've just lost half of myself and I'm still weightly, so. But no, there are good drag queens. I hear Carlotta's really good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's business. It's, and basically back then, you could blur the line. I mean, there were ways of tucking. These guys knew how to tuck in such a way that when you first looked, you assumed you were looking at a vagina. So, And it used to just freak people right out. Because you had to be careful who you told you were gay, because it could backfire where you work or your social circle. So that's where Denman Station, I found, was a great place to break the water, because it was inclusive. It was the first bar that I'd been to that was inclusive. They had to put on extra security when the lesbians were there, but it was inclusive.
I know that they still do bingo for Friends for Life and that, but there's not a lot of that happening anymore.
No, it basically, again, you don't have the volunteers to keep it going anymore. Because if you volunteer, you have to be part of the community. If you have to be part of the community, you have to have a social responsibility. La 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 la. Mm-hmm. 144 characters is a hell of a lot easier. So.
And what was the Vancouver Meal Society, or the Easter Sundays? What were they doing exactly?
Well, Easter Sundays was set up Easter Sundays was basically at Gordon House, and every Sunday we would make meals for people with AIDS. It started that simply, and then from that it became Meals on Wheels, and then that's when I was there too, and just before it changed into Vancouver Meals, I was gone by then. So I'm a chef, so cooking was my way, and it still is my way of dealing with a lot of things. So, and it made me, it was nice to share, you know what I mean? So, and a lot of these people I knew personally. And back then, when you knew somebody personally, it was basically his friend and his friend and his friend, but they all hang together, and they're, you know, there was a whole dynamic happening, and you still get to see it when you're around a bunch of older guys at the bar. It's the picture of the beer goes on, and everybody has something from it, and then the next person buys the next picture. Where right now it just sort of is basically goes onto the table, they drink it, and they walk away, you know? So, right? So.
Well, I mean, free beer.
Yeah, well, so much for manners.
But it was Easter that started that whole Friends for Life. That was,
yeah, because she
campaigned, and then she became Empress, and then she started Easter.
Mm-hmm. And basically because she was bigger than life.
Well, yeah.
You know, and God bless her soul. You know, she was just one of the nicest ladies I've ever met. But God, could she be ironed? Well, you had to be, right?
Yeah.
They're just, enough was enough. When that girl said, there was no but.
Yeah.
But I heard by doing that, she got her vision out.
Mm-hmm.
And her legacy is, you know, mm-hmm. Vancouver Meals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a good legacy to have.
Yeah.
And now they're all professional. They're not just a bunch of people, volunteers, getting together to cook for them. It's all professionally done. So mm-hmm. no chance of infections or things like that. That's the one thing when we're cooking for them, we really had to be careful of, is constantly washing your hands, constantly keeping the place. Because if you gave them anything, mm-hmm. you'd kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Not to put any pressure on you.
Were those meals mostly going to folks in the West End at the time?
Well, this is it. Gordon House is the community West End.
Yes.
So most of these people would come up from the Denman Street area, and they'd come down from up behind the Davie Street. And like I say, you would see the same people there that that you'd known a couple of weeks earlier, you know, and they're looking like hell. And for some people, it was really quick. And others, mm-hmm. it was lingering. And the quick ones were the lucky ones, you know, all things considering, because the ones who fought for life had a miserable life.
Oh.
You know, had a miserable life. But the will to live, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now have. Now there's assisted suicide. Then there wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I know several people who just put my pills on the counter, go for a walk around the block, and come back. The pills are gone, and you know the glass of water is half done, and I feel tired.
Yeah, or make a nice milkshake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, and then we could be charged with murder. No, but fuck it, free room and board. That's my way of coping.
It's come up a lot, black humor.
Yeah, you know. Well, was that? It's my way of coping because I cried my tears, you know, and not that I won't cry more. It's just. Mm-hmm. It's just, now it's a piece of history, so I'm just remembering it. But like I say, for me, it's also when I look to the future, I'm looking at, it's going to be that way again, because this being Welfare Wednesday, we had the ambulance, you know, half a dozen times, and the guy set his suite on fire, so we had the fire department too.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
You know, Mardi Gras! But that's how it started before, so.
Yeah.
I won't ask too many questions more because I feel like we've covered a lot, but what was it like being in a relationship where one of you was HIV positive and the other one was HIV negative in those early years?
Well, in the first 2 years of my relationship with Myron, it was constantly, we can go out and see other guys, you can go out and see other guys. Well, it just wasn't geared that way, so when finally figured that out. And basically, I knew he had AIDS going in. And the way everything was going, I assumed I'd get it quicker. And every 4 months, I'd go get tested and, you know, come back negative. And you couldn't tell anybody, you know? It was like a secret life. I remember one time when it came out, I was getting tested at the gay community center. And I said, and he gave me the form and says, HIV negative. And they said it, and there was a group of people there. And the guy who had done the test to me, he says, I wouldn't brag about it. Mm. You know, so just, that was the reverse discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of twists and turns through it all. Some people rose to the occasion and some didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But was there like a lot of stigma towards HIV positive people within the gay community at that time?
Well, yeah, because at that time in the beginning, nobody knew anything, so they didn't know if it was, you could breathe it on somebody, you know, so, you know, and in the end, just sort of like, well, we're all going to die, so, well, and that's where I think that taking the positive route that I took, was my saving grace, because I just refused to be washed along with the tides, you know. I'm proactive, not reactive. I don't like being reactive because it has ugly consequences with most people. But yeah, it's going to happen how I choose to handle it, you know, is how I choose to handle it. And I'll choose to handle it what's best for me, not for... I think I've done my giving, you know. Not that I'll stop, but I just, you know, I might get my bills paid, you know.
How would you tell the younger or the people coming out now in the gay community that it's okay to be with a person that's positive, right? Because there seems to be a little bit of ignorance out there. Right,
yeah, that's
now.
That's what I'm finding too, that ignorance is coming back. We've gone from knowing everything about it to being willfully ignorant. And I put that willfully in because these kids don't want to know. So, I mean, they prejudge. And, you know, we were all young and stupid. You had to be young and stupid to get old and wise. Mm-hmm. So, you know. So we were young and stupid, too. But we're talking about, dude, learn from my mistakes. Mm-hmm. And they weren't that long ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Mm-hmm.
And the difference is that the information's out there now. It wasn't there in the 80s.
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, this is willful ignorance. Because, you know, with I lived with a positive man for 10 years. You know, mm-hmm. knowing... And then there was no protection. You mm-hmm. know, they're just... You know, that was it. So,
yeah,
how can you... You know, can, it's like... No, I don't like. I don't. It's not that I don't like black people. I just don't date black people. You know, it's not like you don't like Indians. I just don't date Indians. It's the same shit. You mm-hmm. know, different pillow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're being a bigot and you're justifying it. You know, if you don't have the balls enough to treat the person that you're supposed to be in love with as an equal,
mm-hmm.
you know, stick to your 144 characters.
But choosing to love a partner at that time who was HIV positive, I mean, that's a pretty radical rejection of stigma in a lot of ways, to say I love this person, I'm going to be with them regardless of all this fear and hysteria.
Well, this is it. And basically, like I say, he was 15 years older than I was, and he was a tailor and 5'2" and just funniest little guy going with an English wit. And, you know, he's just a... He's 5'2", but he walked into the room and he was 6'4", sort of thing. He was very good at what he did. He worked with the Pappas Furs and Watts Costumes. And, I mean, that's where I got all my costumes, is he'd be making costumes. One year I went as the Count of Monte Cristo and I'm Halloween and whispering all these things in friends' ears that they had shared with me, and it's just, oh my God, they stick around when the mask comes off. So, yeah, so I mean, he always made costumes for us, and basically, he made my, he made the jacket and all that that we did the fundraiser with, and we had an argument about sitting down. And he knows I'd sit down. So he made a cummerbund with steel stays in it. You're not sitting down. So, you know, I don't have to say it, but I got the last word, right?
It's like the booth aids are made of bone. Mm-hmm. You sit like this all night because you can't bend them.
Yeah,
you sit like this all night.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the things we laugh at are morbid and morose, but, you know, sorry, that's the way I come, you know?
Exactly.
It's the only way to survive it all. I mean, you have to find the lighter end to it. I've done my crying. It's not that, like I say, it's all over, but life goes on. And right now, for me, I've had gastric bypass surgery a year ago, so I've gone from 320 pounds to just under 200 pounds in a year. So that's the one thing I find, change, as long as you keep going out of a routine, change is very good. That's where this comes into it, and it just sort of, that's exactly what I thought when Sandy had first approached me on this, is sort of like, I'm speaking for, you know, those who didn't make it, you know? Shine a light on, you know, our community. It was our worst hour, but it brought out the best in most of us, you know, because a lot of people didn't think they did a lot, but a lot of people doing a little helped a lot, because nobody else was helping, mm-hmm. you know. So, and I remember, it wasn't, are you going to the bar, or, you know, when you meet people in the street, are you going to the bar tonight? Or it's basically, have you eaten today? Have you eaten mm-hmm. today? Mm-hmm. You know, so that was Davy Street then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more hands make little work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And basically, it also gave you people to commiserate with, mm-hmm. which was very No, but when I put the bar face on, you become the character, you know, the life of the party, the whole thing. But you come home and you take the makeup off and, you know, you're still flat-assed. So, it's part of the coping skills. Like I say, it's happening yet again, but this time the community is just so fragmented. Yeah. And I think as soon as St. Paul's disappears from here, most of the history will disappear with it. You know? And that would be a large part of the AIDS epidemic and the gay community and the relationship that was formed in St. Paul's.
Especially the old structure there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I used to hate the hospice ward.
Yeah.
And they used to call us because I had the dog then. I had a little miniature pincher, 10 pounds. And everybody loved him. And they used to call us with certain people and they'd say, "Ren, the rattle's begun." So basically, I'd be walking up from Burrard and Jervis and with the dog and basically sit there with the person where the dog could get in between all the wires and that and just give them peace. And that's how a lot of people I know went.
Mm-hmm.
And when the dog died, I just cried for days. So we all did what we had to do. And what I found out is that basically it's good to be unique. So vive la différence, be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the gay community brought out is basically be who you are, explore yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we had a lot less labels. You were gay, you were straight, you were bisexual, you were lesbian, or you were an androgynous. That was it. So it was kind of hard to make 24 groupings out of that. So,
I think we've covered everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you wanted to add before we wrap up, or anything that you thought we'd ask about that we haven't covered yet?
No, not really. I just, I'll probably think of something, you know, later on. But that's life.
We can always chat again if we, mm-hmm. if we need to. If there's anything
well,
that we didn't cover.
I have to clear it first. The perils of Sandy.
Well, if you don't have anything to add for now,
no.
Just wanted to say thank you, Ren, and we'll stop the recording.